This is the first paragraph of the reading you have for tonight. It says, O Conqueror, this is Subhuti asking the Buddha, right? What will happen in the future in the days of the last 500 when the Holy Dharma is approaching its final destruction? How could any one of those times ever see accurately the meaning of the explanations in sutras such as this one? So Subhuti is asking the Buddha, in the last 500, how could anybody ever understand the meaning of this sutra? Will there ever be anybody in those days when the Dharma starts to die that will understand this book? Okay. That's the background. Very interesting things about Buddhism. Which is a religion that teaches impermanence, that the Buddha even predicts the death of his own teachings in this world. During the Buddha's time, the Buddha he gives a very clear explanation of how all things are impermanent, all cause things, and even his own teaching is going to die in this world. And to understand that, you have to understand a little bit about these lines, and where are we? How far are we to the death of the teachings? You know, are we in it already? So that's a very important thing to learn. The four lines I'm going to give you tonight are at the end of the Abhidhamma Kosha. Who wrote that?
Vasubandhu.
When? 350 AD. Okay. The Abhidhamma Kosha is the main text for Abhidhamma. It's the main Buddhist book in all of Southeast Asia, say. I mean, in the Hinayana countries, Theravada countries. And it's very, very difficult. If you ever study it, Rinpoche taught it for 12 years, and it's very difficult. So you struggle through this long, long, long book. It's very difficult. The root text is totally incomprehensible. You get to the end, and this is like the last verse or the next to the last verse, and it's very depressing. All right. I mean, actually, finally get to the whole thing. This is at the very end of the book. Say, Dzembe.
Dzembe.
Namche.
Namche.
Namni.
Namni.
De.
De.
Lungdang.
Lungdang.
Tope.
Tope.
Dagni.
Dagni.
Do.
Do.
Okay, that's by Vasubandhu. Those are words at the end of the Abhidhamma Kosha, which is the main book for the first of the two Hinayana schools. It's by Bhashyaka. Dzenba means the teacher. The teacher.
Be right.
Excuse me? The. Capital T. Okay. It's a word used for the Buddha in original scriptures when they want to refer to this Buddha. Okay. It means the teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Okay. The teachers, Dhamcha means holy Dhamma. Dhamcha means holy Dhamma, Sadhamma. Holy distinguishes it from other Dharma. I mean, Hindus teach a Dharma, but we're talking Dhamcha, highest Dharma. Namnyite means there are two types, two divisions of the Dharma. You can divide the Dharma into two types. Lung, what's Lung mean generally? You guys know. Lung is connected to all these words for air. When a Lama gives an oral transmission of a book, you know, he doesn't teach the book, he just reads it out loud so you hear it. That's called a lung. So lung means the physical Dharma, the physical teachings, the books, the verbal teachings. Those are lung. We call lungi chu. Lungi chu, the physical teachings. Dang means and. Tokpe chu, tokpa means the teachings as they exist in people's minds. Realizations. Okay? Dopa means realizations. Dagni means a combination of those two. Dagni means a combination of those two. So what Vasubandhu is saying at the end of the Abhidhamma Kosha, which is like treasure house of wisdom, he says, the Dharma of the teacher can be divided into two types. The physical teachings, which is the books, people teaching it verbally, and realization, which means the Dharma as people actually understand it or grasp it or realize it inside their minds. So there's two forms of the Dhamma. It's not Tibetan tracks, you really don't have to know that. Say it, Dengzin.
Shepa,
Majeda, Jupa,
Shepa,
Konayin.
Konayin.
Those are the two kinds of Dhamma. What is it for them to survive? What does it mean that the Dharma is still in the world? And Vasubandhu, he gives that a definition. He explains what it means. How do you know that the Dharma is still in the world? What would it be? What has to go on with the Dharma for it still to be in the world? You know, is it enough for it to be in a library? Or does somebody have to be teaching it? Or does somebody actually have to reach some of those levels? Or what's the tse in Tibetan? What is the point at which you can say that Dharma still survives?
People
and what's
practice.
The point past which it doesn't survive anymore? Okay. And that's what Dengzin Shenpa means, keeping it, preserving it. Like Losan Chun Zin means the preserver of the Dharma. So Zin Che means to preserve it. What does it mean to preserve it? In other words, when is it lost? Okay? It's preserved as long as Ma Che. Ma Che means someone teaching it correctly. Ma Che means someone teaching it correctly. And Dang Drupa Chepa means someone practicing it properly. Okay? Someone practicing it properly. Konayin means only that, nothing less. Okay? If that's not going on, what?
It's not in the world.
What? The Dharma has died. The Dharma is gone in this world. Okay? If someone's not teaching, which one do you guess is their teaching? Mostly the physical one. Okay, somebody's not talking properly about Dharma, someone's not giving a proper explanation of Dharma, you can pretty much say that the physical Dharma, the verbal Dharma, the books, the teachings, as you think of them as books and lectures, and then they have died. If someone can't teach them anymore properly, the physical teachings are gone. Drupa Chepa means practice, accomplish them. That refers mainly to the what? The second kind of Dharma, the actual realizations. Okay. In other words, if someone's not reaching those paths anymore, those realizations anymore, you can say that the Dharma in the minds of people has what? It's died. It's gone. Okay. And if no one can explain it anymore, then what? The physical Dharma has died. Which one do you think happens first?
The realization.
Yeah, the realizations. People stop getting. People can still stand around and talk about, oh, the book says this and the book says that. But, and the books may exist in libraries or CD-ROMs or things like that. But nobody will remember what it means. Nobody will really practice it and reach those. People will probably teach it in universities and stuff. But the practice of it will be dead. Yes.
Is there also implied in this statement a continuity from the Buddha? I mean, is it possible that the lineages are all broken and then somebody's born 50 years or 100 years later who Manjushri comes to them and teaches them and there's no direct physical connection?
That's why they say Tsumba. Because Chinnidhapa Shedru asked the same question. By the way, he wrote a commentary on the Abhidhamma Kosha, which we also discovered. It's fantastic. That's actually where I got everything tonight. It's a beautiful commentary. And he says, when we say, how long do the teachings survive in the world, we're talking about the teachings that descended from Shakyamuni. We're not talking like if Maitreya shows up and starts another round of teachings, or if Shakyamuni Buddha is on another planet and teaching, or anything like that. We're talking about the lineage that descended directly from the man who came to India, the Thukku, who came to India 2,500 years ago. So he's very specific. That's why it says Thumba. This teacher's teachings in this planet.
So there's a third condition that's implied, which is a direct transmission.
Yeah, an unbroken transmission. And then Vasubandhu goes on to a very depressing description of what it will be like as the Dharma dies out in the world. It's really depressing. And you have to be concerned about it for several reasons. I mean, one is Buddhism is dying out. Buddhism is definitely in its last stand. I mean, if you go to, I've been to Thailand, I've talked to monks there, I spent time in Sri Lanka in monasteries, obviously a lot of time with Tibetans. I've spent time with Vietnamese monks, I've spent time with Chinese, Taiwanese, Hong Kong monks. It's dying out. The southern countries never had anything more than the Vinaya and the Abhidharma, the two lower schools. And the other countries, if you ask for an explanation of something, if you go to Taiwan to a temple, I mean, they're in between the brothels, and the brothels are more, you know. It's all very, very tenuous. There's very few people who really understand it well. There's very few places where they're teaching it well. It's really, really down to the last few places. You can go to teachers all over the world and ask them for explanations of the four schools or the great books of Buddhism. They won't know. They can't give it to you. And the people who can are very, very few left. I think Karmapa Geshe is from Tibet. There are about five left in the world. And it's a very bad situation. It's a very dangerous situation. You know, we're lucky we bump into those people. But most people can't even get it. You know, there's a Dharma group in California that's asking to come out there because there's nobody to teach there. There's just nobody. There's only three or four Geshe's left in our monastery who can teach everything. There's only one left who can teach Vinaya. So it's a very, very bad situation. It's really bad. And you have to be concerned because when you die, you probably have to come back to this planet. I mean, you probably have to be in this planet. And if we don't work, it sounds like a little crazy, but if you think about it, it's true. If you don't work to preserve something that it's passed on to the next generation, the ones who miss out might be who? It's serious. It's not, you know, you can't sit and be satisfied that okay, you're studying, you have access to the really traditional pure teachings, because you don't know what will happen the next. They say when the breath stops moving between these two little holes, it could happen any moment. You'll be in a totally different realm. You'll be in a different place. You won't remember this at all. And for you to bump into some teacher, if there's only five teachers left in the world, I mean, good luck. You know, what are the odds that you will bump into them again? You know, that's very, very, very small odds. You know, if you're lucky, you're born in India in one of those monasteries, and then you starve because there's no good food there. You know, which we could have arranged. You know what I mean? We could help in this life. So you have to think that way. It's very, very. We are in the last days. We are in the final days. And I'll explain more about that.
So it took slightly more than 500 years. Huh?
We'll talk about it. Now I'm going to give you three versions of how long the Dharma is going to stay in the world. I'm going to give you three different versions. The first version is going to be according to the Buddha himself. What did the Buddha say while he was here about how long the Dharma would stay in the world? And then secondly, you're going to get the opinions of the great commentators, you know, the great Indian commentators and the great Tibetan commentators. What did they say? And then thirdly, you're going to get Chöni Drapa Sherdrup's idea. Okay, so he has examined all of the statements by anybody about how long Buddhism is going to survive. And then he gives a beautiful commentary. I've never seen one like that. He gives you all the opinions, and then he gives his own. He decides which one he thinks is probably the best. And when you can read Tibetan, it's very nice. It's very Western in his thinking. He gives you all the choices, and then he explains why he thinks one of them is correct. Okay. So first we're going to hear from who? Buddha himself. All right. So I have to quote these directly. Yeah. Are you guys warm enough? Okay. If you get cold, let me know. Find a nice big monastery in Manhattan.
Then we can survive.
It'd be very. I mean, Manhattan. The odds of being born in Manhattan are pretty high. I think there's a roach.
Not a time in India. We could carry any RNA. There's one there. Get the hint?
Okay.
Dode, say Dode Kelsang.
Dode Kelsang.
Dode Kelsang.
Dode Kelsang.
Dode means sutra. Kelsang means of the golden age. Sutra of the golden age. Kelsang means good eon. Kelpasang. And in there the Buddha says 500 years from the time of his passing. He says the Buddhism will last 500 years in its pure form. And then he says, 1500 years as a shadow of its former self. I need his bell. So he says 500 years the Buddhism will stay in the world pure, and 1500 years as sort of a traces of what it used to be.
An additional
1500.
So 2000 years total, which ended in 1400, about the time it's in trouble. We'll talk about it. This is all one more. What's a tenor? Anybody know what a tenor is? Mala? Mala? Yeah, rosary. Teng means rosary, okay? Sormo means anila. You did the four swords on your fire offering. What was that?
What?
Swords. When you drew the mandala. No.
I don't know.
So you used your hand.
Oh.
That's a sword, okay? Each one of those is a sword. And when you do a mandala, you do it all with your own sword. That's the ruler you use. So sword means fingers. So what's sword ten? A rosary of fingers, okay? This refers to Angulimala. He was a, you know the story.
No.
Somebody told him you'll reach nirvana if you could kill, I think, 1,000 people and string their fingers on a rosary around you. You know, he met a crazy teacher, like the guy in Japan, and said, and said, you know, if you kill 1,000 people. And he got to 999, or 499, I don't remember.
One short.
He started to chase the Buddha was his next, but he saw the Buddha walking down the road. He had one more to go. And you know what happened, of course. Dokju means avadana. Avadana means life story. It's normally a story of a person's former life. Avadana Shataka is a famous book of 100 of them. In there it says 1,000 years.
For?
How long the Buddhism will stay?
After the 15?
No. This is just another opinion. The Buddha has stated both of these. These are both taught by the Buddha. Yeah.
So, Michael, what is that statement? Sortrang Chen Gi Dokyu.
It means the life story of the person named Fingermala. Finger Rosary. That's that man's name.
And so, how does that
He was converted at the last minute. You know, the Buddha, every time he got close to the Buddha, he couldn't quite catch him. And, you know, it was a beautiful story.
So, how does that connect to 1,000 years?
In that book, which is in the Gangyo, which is in the canon, the Buddha mentions the Buddhism will last 1,000 years.
Oh.
He gives it a date. He gives it a time. That would be about the time of, be about 150 years after Vasubandhu, actually. Before Dharmakirti would have been over already.
Like a second opinion.
You got more. This is another sutra. Do means sutra. And Dawa Nyingbo means the essence of the moon. Probably someone's name, I'm not sure. Or maybe Chandra Garva or something like that. It's a sutra. Essence of the moon sutra. And there the Buddha says it will last for 2,000 years. Which again takes us up to about from Kapha. I'll give you two more.
Michael, is this in a linear progression of when he made the predictions, or is this backwards?
I don't know. And I don't think anyone could tell you, because The whole thing wasn't written down until 500 years later. What's Ningjin?
Compassion.
Karuna, okay, compassion. Bekka, you know? Bedmak couple.
Lotus?
Yeah, this is the Lotus Sutra, okay? One of the Lotus Sutras, there's a couple. The White Lotus Sutra on compassion. The White Lotus Sutra of compassion. That book says, what? 1500 years. Yeah, they're all sutras. We didn't get past the Buddha yet. So we've already got three different opinions, right? Actually, four, because he doesn't mention here anything about there being a pure Dharma and that's about it. I think you should write the English, okay? There's a reason for it, okay? You don't have to memorize this, not on your homework. It's important. I mean in the English letters, okay?
Tamo.
This is important. This is a big prediction.
Tamo.
Tamo.
Tima.
Tima.
Mete.
Mete.
Shubale.
Shubale.
Lo.
Lo.
Nito.
Nito.
Nagya.
Nagya.
Na.
Na.
Dongmachin.
Dongmachin.
Ki.
Ki.
Yudu.
Yudu.
Dambe.
Dambe.
Shura.
Shura.
Tamo Tima Mete Shuba means the sutra of the goddess of flowers. Her name is Vimala Prabha. And it says in that sutra, which is in the Kangya, you should still read the sutra. I tried last night, a couple hours. Lo means years. Years. Oh, by the way, the lay is a colon, right? From her sutra it says, in her sutra it says. Lo, nito means 2,000. Nata means 500. 2,500 years from now.
When's now?
Passing of the Buddha, which was 500 BC. So where does that put you at 2,500 years from now? About 4 years from now, something like that, okay? Dongma Chen means
people with the red faces. Mm-hmm. See, you'll do to their country, to their land. Sorry, goosebumps. The Holy Dharma will spread. Dharma will spread. Yeah, Dampe Chö means Holy Dharma. The Dharma means spread. In fact, as soon as there is a group of monks who perform sojong in a country on a regular basis, the Dharma has reached the country. They can't do it without my
out of our pockets.
I'm not kidding. The time has come. Okay? This is seriously.
All right.
Very beautiful. And I went and checked it last night. And it's in the Congress. I've heard this many times. People quote it all the time. And I always said, come on, where'd they get that from? But it's just quoting the sutra.
So would you say the whole thing?
It is stated in the sutra of the goddess whose name is Flawless Light. After 2,500 years, the Holy Dharma was spread to the land of the red-faced ones. Ruddy complexion. I missed them with me. And I've got them. Probably. Because in the same sutra they discuss the yellow men also, meaning Asians. There's some interaction between some of them are worse, but I won't talk about it. But anyway, so according to that, what? Well, how many years?
Not now.
Well, after 2,500 years, it's still going, so it's still continuing. Okay. So this is the last book that Choni Dhamma Sutra quotes. So he's quoting, how many was that? Four or five? You've got like five different opinions from whom?
The Buddha.
These are all from the Buddha. The Buddha himself. By the way, Choni Dhamma Sutra later is going to explain why they're not contradictory. And he does that in two of his works. So keep that in mind.
Next time you play the lottery. Okay, now we're going to get some Zodanga. I'm not going to write them on the the other commentary to the Abhidhamma Kosha. Who wrote that? Yeah. Vasubandhu's own commentary to the Abhidhamma Kosha. Okay. Vasubandhu himself says 1,000 years. And he's quoting a sutra. That was about 150 years after Vasubandhu died.
Says how long?
Only 1,000.
1,000 years.
Yeah. Vasubandhu says in his commentary on the Abhidhamma, his own commentary in his own book says it'll stay for 1,000 years. So Vasubandhu says 1,000 years.
From Buddha's
passing away. Kamala Shila writes a commentary to Kamala Shila writes a commentary to the Diamond Coated Sutra, and he says in that sutra, Chetan Sum Tong means 500 years short of 3,000. Which means what?
Well,
2,500 years. Okay, that's another way to say it. And he quotes several sources. I'll just tell you one. One is the great commentary to the Perfection of Wisdom. The great commentary to the Perfection of Wisdom. There's many. Okay, it's the Perfection of Wisdom in 100,000 verses.
100,000.
It's called Boom. 100,000. In there it says 5,000 years. But I think the interesting thing is that the Buddha, who's such a big proponent of impermanence, is predicting the end of his own teaching. And I think that's really appropriate. He knows that his own teaching is something caused. And he's been teaching all this time that all caused things die. And then he naturally, at the end of his lecture, he says, and by the way, my own teaching will die out in this world. I think that's just really, I don't think you see that much. So he predicts the end of his own teaching. Chonen Dorpa Shedu goes along with the last one, which is what? 5,000 years. And he breaks it into a couple of categories. And maybe we'll take a short, but I want to explain one more thing. We'll get his opinion when we come back. But when I said that the Dharma was two kinds, what were they?
Books.
Physical dharma, meaning books and verbal teachings. And then the dharma in the hearts of people, in their own minds. The first one, I want to just give you the word for that. You'll see this word a lot, and it's nice to know what it means. You'll see it a lot in Buddhist books.
I just know this mood when they call it Tripitaka. In Indian dancing, yeah.
Okay.
No, that's right.
Yeah, G means three. Okay, G means three, like tricycle. Okay, three. Vitaka means, they translated it as basket. The Tibetans translated it as group. The three groups, the three groupings of the teaching. And the Buddhist canon basically has three great groups, three big parts, three big. You can dump it into three big baskets. Okay, part. The first one is
denial.
Okay. What's the one? What's vinaya mean? By the way, Sanskrit is vinaya, right?
It's a monastic vow, right?
Yeah. Okay. But it refers to eight sets of monastic vows. Eight sets of vowed morality. Okay. Eight different sets of vowed morality. Kimbe Dhamma Dhamma Sunarajan Dhamma Tamana, which means the first three are for laymen and the last five are for ordained people. So you don't have to think that Vinaya just refers to monk's vows. It refers to vowed morality. taking a vow of morality. This particular pitaka hasn't caught hold in America yet. We need some
hot.
We have to try to preserve it. It will be lost. It must come here. We must start it in a strong way, in a good way, in a proper way. So that's up to people like us. We can help.
Okay. Next one is.
What are the three different sets of layman vows?
One day.
It's a one day vow for a man or a woman counting as one. Lifetime woman's vows, lifetime man's vows. And the one day is stuck together because it's so short. Don't get confused with the word sutra, okay? The word sutra here means one of those big groups of the Buddhist canon. Okay? One of the three big groups of the Buddhist canon. All of the books in the Buddhist canon are sutras. So don't get confused. This is sutra meaning a division of the Buddhist canon.
Are you saying there's a further three subdivisions within the sutra class here, number two?
No. It means when you're talking about the pitaka, you're only talking about, when you're talking about the sutra pitaka, you're only talking about some of the sutra.
Lost me on that.
We'll talk about it. There's a subset of sutras called sutra pitaka. All sutras that were ever spoken break down into Dua Vinaya Pitaka, or the Sutta Pitaka, or the Abhidhamma Pitaka, which we're going to get to. Okay. And I'll explain why. Okay? But don't get confused. Sutra means any book spoken by a Buddha. But it also refers to a narrow part of the Kanda, of the sutras as a whole. And that's called Sutra Basket.
And that's what you're referring to in this case?
Yes, sure. Because we're breaking down the three baskets. These are the three baskets, right?
So how do you distinguish which sutras you're referring to here?
I'm about to tell you that. One day it's a bad night has come. Say Numba.
Numba.
Means Abhidhamma. Those are the three baskets. And when you say the Dharma is staying in the world, you mean these three. Mainly. These three have to be staying in the world. These three parts of the Buddha's word. The Buddha's teaching. The physical Dharma refers to the Lungito, Lungichu. The physical Dharma refers to these three things. If these three exist in the world and if they are taught properly, correctly, then the physical Dharma is still here. It's still surviving. It's really hanging right now. Okay? Some of this is shaky. Vinaya for sure. Okay. John asked a good question. He said, how do you know there's 100 and, you know, there's about 1,500 separate works in the Buddhist canon that still exist? Tens of thousands have been lost. We have 1,500 left in Tibetan language. How do you know which are which? How do you know which belong to which? Depending on their subject matter. Okay? It all depends on the subject matter. The book's main subject matter is about the extraordinary training of, what do you get?
Morality.
If it's about the extraordinary training of morality, then it belongs to the which pitaka? Vinaya. Vowed morality. The pitaka on vowed morality. If it's teaching mostly the second extraordinary training, which is morality.
And you just call it sutra?
Sutra pitaka. It's not the same as sutra. And it's very confusing. If someone doesn't teach it to you straight, you get, wow. There's also works written by Indian scholars which are called sutra. And that's really confusing.
What
sutra mean? Sutra means thread. And it refers to the red thread that a Brahmin used to wear. It's a long story. It also means short or brief. It also means a conjunction of three roads, but anyway. and all of them have meaning. So what do you guess for Abhidhamma?
Michael, why are you calling those extraordinary trainings rather than trainings?
They're never called the trainings. The proper word is the Thakkhin Lapasam, the
which means the extraordinary teaching. Probably if people thought it that way, they're just trying to make it shorter. Okay. And why they're called extraordinary is a long story. Okay. Where do those three trainings come from? It's very, very easy. If you don't perceive the main subject of the Diamond Cutter Sutra, you cannot collect piles of merit as vast as the space to the left of me. If you can't do that, you cannot create a paradise. Not every object in your world will be bliss. There'll be a few short. You'll be a few short. Like, the white wall will be bliss, but your toenail won't be, or something like that. The virtue has to be unlimited. The only way you can collect unlimited virtue is by understanding emptiness. That's the Diamond Cutter Sutra is going to say that over and over and over again. If you don't have wisdom, you cannot reach enlightenment. Impossible. If you don't perform your good deeds with wisdom, with knowledge of the emptiness of the situation and everything, forget it. You can't do it. You cannot see emptiness directly unless your mind is at which in which realm?
First level.
Actually, in the form realm. Okay? Your body is in the desire realm. Your mind has to reach a perfect state of concentration, which is actually not in this world. Okay? It's at a higher level called the form realm. You must have perfect concentration. You will never get anywhere unless you see emptiness directly. You cannot see emptiness directly if you don't have perfect concentration. Your mind has to reach a certain point of stillness and concentration to see that thing. Otherwise, it will never happen. And incidentally, if you don't meditate daily for at least 45 minutes or an hour, you'll never get that. Impossible. So if you just think you're too busy, then you're too busy to get enlightened. It won't happen. Impossible. Cannot happen. Never happen. People say, oh, I was cutting wood and I saw emptiness. Forget it. Not true. All the books say your mind must be at that level. And you cannot concentrate well if you have a conscience which is not clear. Impossible. You cannot reach that state of concentration if you have anything on your heart, on your mind, on your conscience. Your morality has to be perfect. You can't.
Yeah. Any speculation what people do experience when they're chopping wood that they call enlightenment?
It's like maybe one of the higher form realm, a sensation of the higher form realm, not a true being there. Because you can't, at that moment, you can't perceive any sense of it. It's impossible. And that's clearly stated in all the Indian texts. There's nothing else there. Doesn't say anything about us. And it's just impossible. Morality is required for concentration. If you have something on your mind, if you haven't confessed something, you know, go to a Buddha image, confess it, and if it's a bad, really bad deed, you're going to have to wear it down. One confession won't be enough. You have to wear it down, and you have to avoid it very strictly. Personally, for yourself, that particular object, you have to avoid strictly. If you don't, you'll never get to that level of concentration. If you do, you'll get to there and more. Automatically. It comes very easy after that. So your morality has to be really pure, spotless. And if there's anything on your mind, you have to get rid of it. You have to work on it, whittle it down until it's gone. And that's through that process of confession and through that process of admitting it, especially to yourself, and then trying to avoid that perfectly. In fact, avoiding it perfectly is the best confession. You know, if you really resolve not to do that thing again, and if you keep that resolution for some time, it destroys the power of that karma. And then you can concentrate. You know, and otherwise you never will be. So that's why those three, they're cause and effect, aren't they? You
know. Why does having something on your mind prevent concentration?
Try it. Yeah. We'll go. We'll take a break. Have some tea. There'll still be ATIP CD-ROMs playing around, and nobody will know exactly what they are. And people will still be talking, teaching them even correctly, but people won't be practicing them after. By the way, these are not just the normal forms of these. These have to be extraordinary.
extraordinary forms of these three practices, morality, concentration, and wisdom, they occur before the first path. Okay, for those of you who know about the five paths, they occur before the first path.
Extraordinary forms.
Yeah, even the extraordinary forms. Before you get, how do you reach the first path?
Renunciation.
True renunciation. When you get real disgust with the bad things of this life, then you've reached the first path. You can have these three in an extraordinary form before you can reach the first path. It's sort of a warm-up to the first path.
In what way do you have these three things?
Obviously, very roughly, very...
Oh, so just some understanding about them.
Yeah, good understanding. Well, good practice, too. Fairly good practice. You can have them. They continue on through the paths also. Chone Drapa Shidu gives an explanation of why he accepts that the teachings are going to last for how many years?
5,000.
He's the most optimistic. He's following some sutras and I'm going to give you an outline of why he believes that. Okay? He explains that. By the way, there is a Prajnaparamita Sutra that he mentioned that says that the Dharma will work its way north also.
From Tibet?
How many Prajnaparamita
Sutras?
Dozens. Kind of eastward.
The teaching is divided into 10 periods of how many years if you got 5,000? 500 years in. I'm asking some deep questions. In the first of the 500, lots of Buddhists are achieving that.
Not complete enlightenment, just.
Right. In the second 500 years, people are achieving non-returner. What's non-returner? Returning to what? That would be not desire realm. Okay. Non-returners are called non-returners because they will never collect the karma again to have to take a birth in this lousy realm that we're in.
You mean the desire realm?
Desire realm. Yeah. They don't have to come back to the desire realm. They'll never take another desire realm birth.
So they'll be in the God realm?
Form of.
But why is that so good if you immediately...
It's not so great. But they're already at a level where that's preferable. They're already called Shirmin Dopa, which means they're not going to turn back from all the Dhamma they already possess. They'll use that form to... The third set of how many years? 500 will be the time of the stream enterers. And lots of people will achieve stream enter. That's a synonym for what? Almost. Directly. Yeah.
What?
Seeing emptiness directly or the path of seeing. Both. The minute you see emptiness directly, you achieve the path of seeing. And you become a stream enterer. You are on your way out. I mean, if it were nowadays, if it were modern English, you'd say on your way out. You're on your way out. You're on an inexorable, what do they call that thing in a factory?
Conveyor belt.
Yeah, you know. You're on your way. That thing's going to start. It's like a conveyor belt. You know, you're on your way. No turning back now. You're on your way out. You step on the
escalator.
These three are collectively called the era of results. There are four great results of practicing Buddhism. These are three of them. So that era, the first how many years? 1500 years after Buddha is the era of results. People are getting great results. The other result, which is not up here, is Chirama, which means once returning. He has to come back to his Zaira one more time. He doesn't list that. Training of wisdom, which you can have when?
Again.
Even before you enter the first step. What do you think the next one is? What do you think the next one is? There will probably come people who reach concentration but don't reach wisdom. You see, we're getting lower and lower as we go. anyone has achieved this one has achieved the other two, right? See what I mean? Mm-hmm. What he says is, by the way, this is all from a sutra. This is the era of practice. The Tibetan word for practice, which is drupa, is a pun, because it also means to try.
Unsuccessful?
Right. I mean, it means to be in the act of striving for something, implying that you ain't got there yet. So there's a meaning here. Here they have achieved the results of practice. Here they are practicing. You know, they're trying to practice. Which dharma dies first?
Realizational.
In people's hearts, in people's minds. That dharma dies first. What do you guess might come next? What's left after that? I have to say three different things.
Three best.
Cool. So, yeah, the physical teachings on which these three are, which teach these three, then become the main thing. Just the physical teachings. People who can practice them and learn them and master them have already gone. People who mastered them and got the result of mastering them are gone. It's just the era of those three baskets on that. First one is what? The highest one. And then the what?
Sutra.
And you know what that means. It's Tibet Mantra. These are called the era of the physical dharma. I mean, people are still talking about it, but they're not practicing it still. And much less anybody who achieved the result of practice. It is, yeah.
So how can you talk about the era?
In fact, that's the definition of a listener. A listener vehicle. People who hear Mahayana and can explain it and even transmit it to others but cannot practice it. That's why they call them yintas or shravakas. In one sense of that word. Number 10. Faksan means, you give me a word, I don't know. Faksan means, we had a big fire the other day, and at the end there was only this little pile of stuff left. What do you call it? It means only a dot. Only a dot. Dot means like a sign.
Ashes. Residents.
It doesn't refer to the... I mean, it just means a trace.
Residuality?
Just a trace.
Residue.
You could say that. But it's not really leftover. It's a trace. Just a trace. It's actually called the era of just a trace. Era of a trace, Master? He said just a trace. You can find a better word. But what he says is there's nobody practicing well, and there's nobody who has correct view. No one understands the Dharma properly. What do you think Drapa Shirdi wants to do after that? He explains why he accepts the view of 5,000. And by the way, he explains why the other viewpoints are, they each have their own emphasis. One means in India. One means in its true form. One means... one is just the Buddha said it to make his students upset so they would work harder. and then he goes through a list like that. What do you think he would... What would you do next if you were him? What would be on your mind?
Where are we?
You know, he tries to figure out where is Chöni Drapa Shirdup and his contemporaries. When did he live?
1675.
Born in 1675. Okay, let's say 1700. All right. And he says, he repeats over and over again, look, it's a very difficult question. Dating for us in Tibet in 1700, to try to date when the Buddha... By the way, 2500 years is what Western scholars think. Okay? I mean, after all discussions, and the Tibetan historians don't agree at all. You know, Bhutan Rinpoche Lotsawa, the one who wrote the Blue Annals, Geptung Lumo, they don't agree at all either. It's hard to date when did the Buddha live. Indian history, if you ever try to study it, is a big fog. You know? I mean, all the books written about Indian history are very vague. And they admit, we don't really know when this king lived. We're not sure when this king lived. We think it was that. We think it was that. There are a lot of arguments among scholars.
Can't they do carbon dating? I think it's holiness.
Maybe.
He wants to do...
Maybe they go, but very difficult. Really difficult. So he takes a shot, and he says, I'm just taking a shot. Okay, and he says, according, as far as I can figure out, based on when Tibetan historians believe the Buddha passed away, which is probably as good as anyone else's shot, okay, he believed that they had already reached the end of the fifth 500 years. Okay, which would make him about, according to modern scholars, about 400 years, 300 years off, 290 years off. Not bad for history. Okay. And we're not sure the Western scholars are right. And then he believed that like 160 years had gone by of the sixth one in his time. So you figure that out. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me make sure. Mm-hmm. I believe he says 160. Yeah, he says we are in the sixth era, the sixth one, which is the training of morality, and 116 years have gone by. And he dates it according to the animal year. We could actually figure out what year he wrote this book. I could give it to you all. He believed that they were in the dates of the training of morality. So
how would you explain just that? Being in the training of morality during that period.
It means that people have reached, have degraded, degenerated to a point where there are still people who are good at Vinaya, but who don't understand Abhidharma and they don't understand Siddha Prajapada. You know, and I think you can see that in some Buddhist countries. I think, or I've been in monasteries where they understand the Abhidharma, but they practice the Vinaya pretty well. In fact, it's their main practice. But if you ask them to explain these two subjects, you don't get much. You can be practicing this and not understand the other two very well.
So is the point that it's mostly died out? Everything above that's mostly
died out? Yeah, it's hard. It's not to say nobody's reaching arhat. It's not to say nobody's perceiving emptiness directly, but he says a lot of people. Are there a lot of people in the world who are mastering the training of concentration, who are mastering the training of wisdom? Since those days are already gone. He says, you do see exceptions, and he lists exceptions. He says, you know, we can't say the teachings have died out. He says, there's the proof of this statement, which is from Sutra. But also, he says, there's the proof of beings in 1700 in Tibet who were obviously very advanced. So he says, you know, you look around us, there are great monks. And they have learned everything. So he says, they're obviously, we haven't reached the end of the teachings. You know, I don't accept the idea about 1,000 years. We're way past 1,000 years, and there's still all these great Tibetan saints, these great monks, like mastering and reaching high levels. You know, he says on the basis of direct perception and on the basis of reasoning, he says, the 5,000 years sounds correct to me. So that's Choni Dhaka Shigi. And that's how we divide them. Okay. One more short thing. We'll finish on time. I don't have a... He asked, where's the Dalai Lama? I mean...
Off the top.
Actually, there's a Buddha. You know, this is 500 years later. No. This is all 500 years after he passed away. I can't judge, right? I don't have a tema about it. I don't have a prana. I can't read his mind, you know. All I can take is indications. I mean, you take the evidence and you extrapolate from that. But, you know, to say that, I know the Dalai Lama is a Buddha is a self-enumerated statement, I think. Unless you can...
Unless
you've had a direct perception of it, or a correct deductive perception of it. I have a partial deductive perception of it. You know, I have enough evidences to what I can perceive that I believe that he very well could be. You know, and as a Buddhist, we're not supposed to say, I know, until you can confirm it. You know? And if I had any way to confirm it, I probably couldn't convey it to you anyway.
except for reasoning. Okay. So anyway, okay. What's other errors? Why did we talk about all this? Do you remember? What's that got to do with the Diamond Cutter Sutta? It was at the beginning of class. Read that first paragraph again.
Teacher.
Can you read it?
Would it be anybody still able to perceive the teacher in the end of this era?
In the end of which era?
In the text was say? 500 years. But
said, the no, he says the. What's the text say? No, I mean, what did the Diamond Cutter Sutra say? George's job. First paragraph.
Well, how could any one of these, of those times, ever see accurately the meaning of the explanations given?
What did he say just before that? In the days of the...
What will happen in the future in the days of the last 500?
The days of the last 500. Chonigapa Shedrup is trying to explain that first. It occurs in the sutra, it occurs in the Sanskrit version. And he's saying, you have to understand, it refers to those 10 eras of 500 years each. So what the last 500 is what? I mean, it's 4,500 years after the Buddha dies, up to 5,000. It's the worst of the days. It's the worst era. It's the era in which there is no correct practice of Buddhism, no really pure practice of Buddhism, and no really pure viewpoint among people in the time. And Subhuti is asking the Buddha what? What will happen then? Will there be good people around? Will there be people around who what?
Can understand.
Who can understand what this thing is all about. You know, like if the Diamond Cutter Sutra makes it to 5,000 years from now, you know, how could there be anyone left who could understand what it means? And the Buddha says, don't ask that stupid question. He says just that. Please don't ask this question. You know, he repeats the question. He says, that question, don't ask me. And he says, of course there will be. I mean, it's kind of heartening. Okay? He says, yes, there will be people, even in that distant time, who do understand this sutra. There will be people who understand the sutra. There will be people who understand the perfection of this. But if they think they are people, they don't.
What? Oh.
Now I'm going to give you a few words. We'll finish. Because chairs have dock, wall has dock, New York City has a dock.
What is the heading for this?
I'll say it and catch it, okay? Those bodhisattvas who live in the last 500, who do understand what this sutra is, who will understand, they will not be bodhisattvas who think these four things exist. Those bodhisattvas who understand what this sutra means, 10 times 500 years from now, will not be people who think that these four things exist. And if they were, they wouldn't be great ones. And that's why we talked about this bodhisattva. Those bodhisattvas in the future think that these four exist. Well, then they wouldn't understand the meaning of the Dharma. Dharma means self-nature. Kamala Shila says specifically, me. I heard this word explained about 10 days ago by a very scholarly Buddhist scholar. He says, the sense of me. Is that the Dakcha? Obviously not. Of course, you are me. Come on, who is Dhamma Stray? If not me. Of course it's the sense. Sense of me is not a Dakcha. What, do you want to go around thinking you're somebody else?
But it's also your sense of yourself.
Not at all. Buddha has a sense of himself. We talked about it in the last
class. What's a gotcha?
Gotcha means the thing we deny. What is a self-existent thing? It would be a me which does not depend on your objection. Obviously. Of course there's a me. Who do you think is standing up here teaching? Who do you think is listening? That's silly. That's just a wrong view. Stupid wrong view. Harmful wrong view. Gives people the wrong idea about emptiness. They waste their time. Waste their lives. Okay? It's a me, self-existent me, a me which does not depend on my own projection of my tomorrow. And
Sanjay means, you know what it means literally, right? It means sentient being. In Tibetan and in Sanskrit, it means anyone with a mind, anybody who has a mind. Now, Chone Dapa Shedrup, of all the Buddhist writers I've ever read, adds an adjective. He says that you cannot understand this unless you add the adjective suffering right here. And you'll hear Tibetan Buddhist scholars debate hour after hour, why isn't the Buddha a sentient? Why isn't the Buddha included amongst sentient beings? If the word means has a mind. Of course he has a mind. Suffering mind. It's great. You tell me Dr. Shida really explain that. Yeah.
I'm a little confused. Are you saying that a bodhisattva would not believe that sentient beings exist?
I didn't say that.
That was the title.
That was what you said. Those body.
Oh, come on. You've already had enough body kind of sutras to know what I mean. Thought this thing exists without your
projection.
I never said Mike the monk wasn't standing up here. And I never said that you shouldn't take all these ropes and stuff to mean that I'm a monk. But not without your projection. Assuming you're not the Eskimo. Okay? You know the Eskimo thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, assuming Eskimo hasn't seen a monk. Kamala Shila says this is a code word for what do you get? What's the second kind of grasping? It's one thing to grasp to Mike. And in fact, it's that grasping which will be destroyed first when you see emptiness directly. For Fran, it will be Fran's self-existence. For Cheryl, it will be Cheryl's self-existence. For me, it's Mike's self-existence. But the second one you perceive is the mind. Okay. My finger, my hand, my house, my face. Specifically, the my parts.
I don't get how a sentient being leads to mind.
It's probably something to do with the but here in Sanskrit. Having, possessing. This word, dark, emphasizes the centrality of the self. Sentience emphasizes the possession of some kind of quality, having a mind. And Kamala Shila says, the reason the Buddha repeats these four things is that each one has a certain meaning. Self means life. The problem is that the Buddha here, he says, those bodhisattvas won't see self-natures. Those bodhisattvas won't see sentient beings. Those bodhisattvas won't see anybody with life. Those bodhisattvas won't see any persons. And if you don't know what he's talking about, it seems strange. Actually, they're all synonyms. Yeah.
It's a synonym for the fact that they will all have perceived the emptiness directly.
Why go through four different words for a person, you see? And Kamala Shila wants to emphasize, the first one refers to the self-existence of me. A self-existent me. The second one refers to self-existent mind. The third one refers to self-existent me over the length of my whole life. Who lives a whole life.
Did you say self-existent mind? Over the
yeah. Mm-hmm. Or me, mostly me over the length of my whole life. And then Gansat represents a person in the sense of someone who moves around, someone who takes me there, someone who moves. Someone who comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. He doesn't gloss it that way. It's a Sanskrit pun, I think. So that's all. The point is, this one emphasizes me. This one emphasizes mine. This one emphasizes me over the length of my life. And this one emphasizes a person who is moving around.
The self-existent nature of a person who's moving around?
A person who is self-existently moving around. Is there such a thing? No. It's a purple elephant who's walking around. This is the personality of a purple elephant. This is the purple elephant's leg. This is the purple elephant over the length of his whole life. And this is the purple elephant when he walks around.
Okay.
And when he takes a breath. Do any of them exist? Mm-hmm. But he just wants to emphasize it. That's why the Buddha repeats these four strange words over and over during the Dhammapada Sutra. It's nice to know. If you're going to appreciate the sutra, you better know that. If you read a translation, God knows what they wrote. Okay? Why would he repeat that four times? Why would he say four different things that pretty much mean the same thing?
And what was the statement that this is an explanation of?
The Buddha says, those bodhisattvas who will understand this sutra will not believe in these four things. And if they do, they're not great bodhisattvas, and they don't understand this sutra. But there will come bodhisattvas in the future. The Buddha says, how is anybody ever going to understand this sutra? The Buddha says, don't worry, they're coming. Even in the last 500-year era, there will come great bodhisattvas. Why are they great? They will understand that these four things, what? Don't even exist. And they won't grasp to that. As they do good deeds, they will not grasp to a self-existent self who is free of your projections, which were forced on you because you did a good deed before. We'll talk more about it. Quick, because it's late.
How is that different from bodhisattvas of any other time?
Well, it's just, the Buddha is concerned that there won't be any left later. No, they're the same. A great bodhisattva is a great bodhisattva in any era. Amy has a short announcement, then we'll start there. Very short.
Very short. There's a conference on women that's going to happen in Beijing, and this preparatory conference right now at the UN. And they're deciding whether the Tibetan women in exile will be able to attend. The Chinese are planning to bring 500 Tibetan women from Tibet to give the Chinese line that nothing is happening in China. And so we have a letter. The Tibetan women just went over this letter. And if you would sign this letter, this is to the secretary, the woman who is the head of the secretary general of this conference. There have been articles in the Times, and by Wednesday, some word should be out. Maybe there'll still be time for some pressure. But if you can take these letters and sign them, I'll take them back and put them in an envelope, touch testing around, and give them to me at the end. And I also have petitions to sign if you would like that. One to the UN, and one also to this lady, Mrs. Mangela. And so, and if you want to take it and have people sign it wherever you are, please.
It really is true that I've met many nuns and many monks who have escaped. We get about 100 a year at our monastery. They've been abused. The nuns especially are our favorite targets for the Chinese police. And they really get abused. They get beaten, they get raped with electrical instruments.
What?
Very common, very, very common. So, it'd be nice if someone who knew it could come to that. But the point is they're trying to stop these people from coming.